people who love them.
Hello, this is The Thing About Cars, coming to you as always from Strongbox West in beautiful Atlanta, Georgia. Today at the table we have our usual full house.
Becca.
Ronnie.
Ben.
And I'm Mickey. Just a couple items of housekeeping. We are heading to the C5 car show at the Brookhaven Arts Festival on October 21. We hope to see you there. I wonder if Greg will let us record.
That would be cool.
Let's ask him. Yeah. I'll ask him. And we do have a Patreon page. That is patreon.com/thethingaboutcars. If you would be so kind, we are trying to raise a little bit of money to get better microphones and better recording gear, and we would very much welcome your help with that. As always, your comments and criticisms about the show are welcome via our webpage, thethingaboutcars.com, or even on Facebook if you want to find us there. On the board today, we have a good selection of topics that we're going to go into. Let's just jump right into it. The first thing I think I want to talk about is ants in the car, and that one's mine. I have ants in the Mazda. In fact, they're in the ventilation system.
What?
Ugh. Oh, my.
Oh.
So the question is, what in the ventilation system is attracting them?
This is a new meeting for flying ants.
Right.
Sorry, I had to.
Yeah, at first I thought they were going for crumbs or something under a seat, so I vacuumed the hell out of the car twice.
I'm wondering what's trapped in your filter, possibly. Most cars have a passenger cabin air filter.
So it's a brand new filter. I put it in two months ago.
And I'm trying to remember where I got it from. It was maybe Autobarn. I don't know. I'm going to have to look to see where I ordered it from. It's kind of think like compressed air. So it's a spray type canister. What you're meant to do is put it into your ventilation and run it.
Interesting.
And it's pulling this cleaner through your your HVAC system in the car, and I'm wondering if you might benefit from that. It depends on what's in there.
Let me tell you what I've done so far. Because I think the ants are not going after food, especially since they're in the ventilation system. I think they're going after water and a cool space to live, right? So there's plenty of condensate in that system. If I turn the AC button off and let it run, it blows out a ton of humidity for a while until the system's dry. So what I did last night on the way home is I opened up all the windows and cranked the thing up to 90 degrees and just blasted the system just to see if I could desiccate the entire thing. The ants did not like this. and so I think I saw fewer ants in the car this morning than I did yesterday. I've also gotten diatomaceous earth and sprinkled that over parts of the carpet and in between the car seats. Becca gave me a funny look. Diatomaceous earth.
Oh, sorry. No, when you said that, well, if you want to explain what it is.
I can explain.
Yeah, go for it.
So it's
silica.
It's silica. And you can buy it at like Home Goods, Home Depot, or not Home Goods, Home Depot or like Lowe's.
Insect control.
It helps kill insects as long as it stays dry. The moment it gets wet, it's
ineffective
completely.
But the whole point, it's meant to shred their exoskeletons. And that's
why. It dries them out. It cuts little tiny cuts in their exoskeletons, and then they like dry out completely. And
well, it depends on the size of the critters too. Kind of when cool. you use them, when you own frogs, it's to shred the mites because they're so tiny. But that's the funny look, since that's what popped into my head. I'm thinking of you pouring this into your HVAC system, and you've got this diatomaceous earth flying at your eyeballs. Yeah. That was the look. That was the visual image.
For the record, everyone should avoid breathing diatomaceous earth.
Oh, yeah.
And don't put it in your eyeballs.
Do not put it in your eyeballs. Do not put it in your ventilation system. Just put it on the ground and leave it there.
Although it's actually incredibly safe in the big picture. I use it in the house where I have cats and they're fine.
Cats are large. Yeah. So
you can buy food grade diatomaceous earth. It says that on the package. Mm-hmm. So I've done that, but the ants are still in the car. I understand that the diatomaceous earth will take a few days to become effective. In the meantime, I'm tempted to put like a good old fashioned borax ant bait in there, something like taro, or just make my
own. That's where I was thinking was.
I might just make my own. And stick that in there. But, you know, I don't want the liquid bait in the car because I'm going to take a corner and liquid bait's going to go all over the floorboards.
Not if it's in one of the bait stations. It's not filled to the brim. And the Toro tends to be sticky-ish.
We have a, this is for the listener, I don't think we've ever talked about this before, but my house has a huge ant colony that likes to invade the house every once in a while.
Mm-hmm.
We have tried everything in the world with the nice extermination company to try to blast these things to kingdom come, but they're ants. There is no reasoning with them. They just keep coming back, and they keep coming back hard. Mm-hmm. So I have put the Taro stationary ant baits in my bathroom and gone on a road trip and come back, and the stuff is spilled everywhere.
Messy ants. They get drunk.
Right.
Yeah, party down.
Or it's me. I'll climb out of the shower and I'll inadvertently hit one of the traps, and now there's syrup all over the floor.
Okay, so mix it with either borax or sugar, attracting it more to still retain the poison. The sugar
too.
Would make it stickier, maybe thicker.
So make it dry.
One thing I did in our house, because I'm quite sure the hill we're built in is actually an ant mound.
Exactly.
I took this little, and you're not going to be able to see my hand things. It's a kid's type of yogurt container. I turned it into an ant bait station by drilling little holes and made it this little thing in the middle. And actually, I took a cotton ball and soaked it in a borax sugar water combination.
Mm-hmm. Mm-hmm.
But you have to keep it wet, so you'd have to keep going in and doing that. But it worked fabulous.
Well, maybe I'll just...
So there's... probably something you can come up with, but there is also, I think I might have mentioned it way back when, bug bombing your car.
Yeah.
As long as you look for the dry, non-residue foggers, because you have the electronics in the car, so you want the electronics, say, fogger. It is something I've done before to cars. If they've sat too long, I will bomb them.
All right, I'll keep that in mind. I'm actually not opposed to that at all, but if there's an easier way to get the ants to leave my poor Mazda alone, then I want to try to find that solution.
Or maybe they just want to go on a road trip.
No road trip for the ants. Sorry.
I mean, we are right around the corner from winter anyway. I mean,
that's the other, yeah.
Georgia's winter.
Well, the ants do get a lot slower in the winter.
Right.
Yeah.
At least you can trap them easier or something.
we were playing whack-a-mole with the ants yesterday as they started to come out. We're like,
oh my gosh.
So we have, you know, my fiance, a black belt, and me, this behemoth, sitting in the car. I'm like, we probably shouldn't be hitting the dashboard that hard. but we were having fun with that. Okay, what's next on the list? Disposable cars. Should we talk about that?
Disposable cars?
Yes.
Yes.
What?
Ronnie.
The direction in which car manufacturers are going, and I feel like I've brought this up before.
Well, and I have made comments a lot.
Yeah, and I don't mind bringing it up again in hopes that a vehicle manufacturer will finally listen. And I think Toyota may have been the only one that did hear me in my prayers one night. It's getting to a point where it's getting harder and harder and less reasonable to hang on to any newer car that would be sold as a desirable car. Being that I am, you know, most familiar with this manufacturer, I'll use BMW as an example. The modern day M3s, great cars. If any of you drove it, you would have a blast. You would smile ear to ear. They're fast, they're nimble, they're better than anything you've ever driven in your life. The problem is that they are not reasonable to maintain. They have this ridiculous cost coefficient that would prevent anyone with any form of reason to hang on to the car. And it's already started in the 2008 model M3s, the V8, the S65. Beautiful sounding car, super fast, super good looking, et cetera, et cetera. But rebuilding the engine is an astronomical cost, which isn't an uncommon job. The engines have been known to fail anywhere between 30 and 60,000 miles.
Whoa.
If you're
Wait a minute. Total engine failure at 30?
30,000, yeah.
Holy mackerel.
You can drop a valve at 30 if you drive it
so
as hard as it's supposed
for my
to.
Honda Civic.
No more
right
picking
now
on Ford, people, I'm telling you.
Yeah,
my
right
Honda
there
Civic, guys.
I have several
217,000 miles right now.
I'm in shock.
Yeah, I have several race friends that had M3s, and they would drop valves right at the 37,000 mile mark in the middle of a race. And, you know, we're talking to a guy. I had a Honda S2000 that I bought with 32,000 miles on it. I wrecked it at 78,000 miles, hydroplaning on the highway. And
I know a lot of people that have done that, by the way.
Yeah, it's
that car seems to do it.
It's a super finicky car, and I was overzealous. Mm-hmm. It was totally my fault. I should have been going slower. But anyway, so of around the 50,000 miles I put on that car, about 25 to 30,000 of those miles were race miles. I drove that car so hard at a variety of tracks. And yes, I was replacing fluids and brake parts that frequently. But the only thing that ever went wrong with it is I lost an injector. And that was $80. And that was it. The M3, I mean, this guy did, I think, one friend I'm thinking of in particular did 6 track days. And that's where he lost his valve. And
how much is a new engine?
Brand new, somewhere around $60,000.
What?
Yeah.
$60,000 for an engine?
Yeah. Back when we were pricing them out, this was back in 2009, 2010, they were somewhere around $60,000 for the engine. It was obscene.
Unbelievable.
But the thing crossing my mind is you're talking about blowing it on the racetrack or how many race miles. Not everybody listening is a race car driver. So how...
We only wish we were.
Right. How many of these problems surface when you're driving it like Joe Blow next door?
So there was a ratio that I used to hear about. I think one race mile is the equivalent of, I want to say it was either 100 or 500 normal miles.
So it's still blowing for Joe Blow next door, but it's doing it at 60,000 instead of 37?
Right.
So it's still happening for regular use.
Right. And then you look at the resale value of this M3, and you can get them for $28,000 now. I'm speaking specifically of the 2008 to 2012 models.
Really?
Yeah, and it's a great buy. But
gee, should I have gotten that instead of the G8? My family would never have spoken to me again, but
they're difficult cars. And please, listeners, don't quote me on a lot of the prices that I'm mentioning on that. But I do remember them being astronomical prices, and it also didn't add up to make sense of, oh yeah, it's totally worth putting that kind of money into it. And that goes for the more common cars as well. I mean, you go for a modern day, gosh, one of my favorite cars, the Lexus IS250, which sold at $30,000 to $40,000 in the late 2000s. Now they go for $2,000 to $3,000 because their transmissions fail, and the transmissions are about $6,000 to replace. It doesn't add up, as opposed to, you know, a 1995 Honda Civic, where if the engine blows, you can literally rebuild it from the ground up, which I did for a customer, for about $2,200.
Right. Right.
You know? And so then you get another 180,000 miles out of that engine.
So the topic being disposable cars, I guess the first question that I want to ask is, what is disposable?
Disposable meaning a customer buys a vehicle knowing it only has X amount of life, and then it just goes to a junkyard. There's no one that can follow up on it.
But haven't we kind of created that atmosphere? The majority of people seem to want to buy a new car and then turn around and sell it when it starts having any kind of issues, so it's not their problem. I'm not saying that's everybody, but that seemed to be an awful lot of the non-car people thing to do.
Yes.
Just buy new cars every 2 years. And
I wish I could do that, but instead I'm texting a friend about helping me replace the motor mount soon.
But I kind of think that, A, we created that type of environment by the majority of us not wanting to deal with a car that needed more than an oil change, but also the manufacturers making the most money, so they just, you know, crank up the manufacturing of new cars, spit them out, and that's how they're making their money.
Ben, is the Mazda 3 a disposable car?
I would say no.
Okay, why would you say that? Because the reason I'm asking you specifically is because it is a recent make. It is done in the last. Yours is not even 10 years old yet.
No.
So why would you say it's not a disposable car?
Well, because I'm not aware of anything unusually expensive to keep it from staying on the road. It's been just dead nuts reliable. It wasn't that much to buy. It's lasting a really long time. My wife has one as well that is a bit older. It's 11 or 12 years old now, and it's just cruising right along, no issues. So I would say we both got our money's worth out of it.
So, I mean, we're inadvertently giving a plug to Mazda in this regard, but is...
Don't we always?
Right. Is Ronnie right? Are we looking at a disposable culture that has extended into the world of cars?
Possibly so, yeah. And it really sucks, too, because they do make them. There are so many expensive ones that a lot of people really aspire to. They want it. They pay the big bucks for it. And it's gone in a few years. You know what they say about fools and their money.
True.
But that's when you just change it, fix it, drop in a new engine, get rid of whatever. If you truly love a car and you want that car for the long haul, there's lots of things you can do. You might end up with only the shell being the original part of it, but...
But can you afford to, and is it worth that much to you?
Well, once you don't have a car payment anymore, if you were willing to...
When you don't have a car payment and you're pretty DIY, it's good to know that you can keep a hold of one for a while.
I could pay $60,000 for that engine, or for that same money, I could just buy three more used M3s.
Yeah. It gets to be a weird place, because I think what a lot of the public doesn't understand is when you buy a car for whatever price, you have to reference the original price for its maintenance costs. So in the case, I have two BMW engines just sitting in my garage, from a 2004 525 and a 530. And once upon a time, those engines were somewhere around the $9,000 mark. And I'm getting, I'm trying to sell the engines on Craigslist and wherever else. People have been calling in, and I'm selling them for somewhere around, $1,300, which is pretty market average for those engines. And people will call in asking to buy them for $500 and $600.
What?
Yeah. And it's like, what car are you putting it in? Because if it's a project, something custom, I might be interested in just following up with it. But no, it's 2004 BMW 5 Series, and then you want to pay $500 for the engine? The car was originally $70,000.
Yeah, no, that
out
doesn't
the door.
Compute.
Right. So if you, chances are they bought the 5 Series for $5,000, maybe less. And they kind of cringe at the thought of putting a fifth of the price into the repair right off the bat. The car won't sell for much more than 8 to 9, I imagine, even in excellent condition, maybe 13, 14 tops. But the perception gets horribly skewed, and it's forgotten that the car that you got for $5,000 was once a $70,000 car.
But it could be as simple as somebody really needs an engine for their car, and they just don't have a lot of money to spend.
But then why did they get a BMW?
I don't know.
They
had a better job at the
price.
We cannot assume people always act rationally
either.
They
love the car.
They got it for what they thought was a good price. And
right.
Then they think, well, if you don't ask, the answer is no, so might as well ask about this engine.
Right.
Right.
Also.
Well, that's the other part of that is just there's asking and then there's just blatant lowballing.
Yeah.
Right.
Yeah.
Right. So I feel like a lot of lost expectations are made. And I think part of that is the disposable car culture. Because people think, oh, well, if the car's gotten rid of for cheap, then everything else, it's probably the person didn't want to deal with it. They didn't have the time. It's never a thought that the money was the issue. And since they let go of it for cheap, it must not be that much to fix it or something along those lines.
Right.
Or there's a whole bunch wrong with it, or that's just the value of the vehicle. Right. Some cars hold value better than others.
Right. And it's gotten disheartening to see how many manufacturers have leaned towards the 80 to 100,000 mile model of, well, if the car lasts that long, we've made our money, the initial consumer is happy. Mm-hmm. It almost feels like they want to bone the
third and fourth owners. Yeah, but that's pretty much what they're concerned about, is the initial customer.
But I feel like the third and fourth owners are the ones that make long-lasting communities. Mm-hmm. And cultures and stuff. I don't think Corvette owners are based off of, C7s only. It's
right,
C4 and C3 owners that are...
And I totally agree. And I don't know. I know I've at least thought about this before. The auto manufacturers having divisions instead of making all their money on just mass producing new cars also have a portion of the brand itself for restoration of older cars. I mean, why not? Instead of just having the regular repair shops, yeah, that's fine, but also have an area where they can restore the older ones.
Right.
Why not? Isn't that a new avenue for them to make money? And
well, this touches on another thing we've talked about in the past, which is I've heard that the auto industry wants to move to a sealed power plant.
Yeah, that's my concern. I mean, that would just be the McDonald's of cars.
Sorry. So the argument is you would then drive your new car to the dealership. They would literally lift the engine out, drop a new one in.
Like a
you
pod.
Go just, exactly.
Yeah, no.
And mm-mm. They would keep their Big Mac engines on the shelf and pull, you know, send those off for repairs.
I was thinking chicken nuggets, actually. they come in those little pod things.
Right.
Sorry, I'm hand gesturing the clamshell here.
Right. Anyway, this may be a topic for the other day, and I think we are rapidly running out of time. Is there anything else we need to say about this topic to put it to bed?
Yeah, quit making disposable cars.
Right.
Yeah, make something that we can pass on to our kids without worrying about it eating through our mortgage payments or something.
There you go.
That's stop a great mass producing, and that is actually part of it. The cars, as far as longevity, are getting worse and worse and more yep. and more disposable, but the cost of cars is going up and up and up, in some cases unreasonably so.
Mm-hmm.
And it's just, it doesn't seem to balance, but it seems like people are
allowing it. Well, especially here in Atlanta, we see it firsthand because we've got the biggest wealth gap in the whole country here, mm-hmm. and we see people driving ridiculous cars down the road that they don't even know what they're doing.
You know, and the idea, I'm sure people look at the cars and say, oh, you're driving that POS because you can't afford anything else. We ought to put stickers on the back. I want to drive this car. My car is better than your new car.
Right.
Something along those lines. No, I want this one.
All right. On that note, let's just wrap things up.
Thanks for listening, guys.
Yes, thanks for listening.
Don't forget our Patreon page.
Which is where?
What is it? Patreon.com/thethingaboutcars.
Exactly.
And don't forget about Facebook page.
That's true.
And the thing about cars.
Right,
yes. And subscribe to.
Yes, like and subscribe. That's what my kids' videos all say. Like and subscribe us.
And actually, you know, we've got great listeners, and we do get good feedback and comments from folks. So if you do have further questions, car questions, or it doesn't even have to be about a car. It could be about a driver.
That's right.
In that case.
So drop us a line. Let us know. Otherwise, until then, we are The Thing About Cars, and we will look forward to seeing you next time. Thank you.
Bye.
Thank you for listening. This has been The Thing About Cars. We'll see you on the road.